is the world that we're living in now, in some ways, in a strange way, maybe conducive to your creative processes?
Well, when the pandemic first hit and when the first wave of cancellations really like hit me in the face, I guess I pretty quickly dived into other ways of making music and sharing it. I guess I just pretty quickly went and explored the tools that I might have to use given this like new reality. I just generally found the question of why we do what we do as musicians in the absence of the containers that we're like usually given in which to do what we do. Like I found the question of why in the absence of that very, very generative. And for me, it led me to different places. I've been improvising much, much more during this time. Like I would say it felt like my primary focus actually. And I've learned to work with my microphones in a new way. Like it's just changed my focus, and it led to a different approach. Certainly in the past month, after protests began in Minneapolis, and I'm so grateful to everyone in Minneapolis for what they've done, my focus has shifted. I've been really quite invested in those protests and paying attention to them and participating in them when I can and trying to help the movement. And that, I don't think, is so much about showing up to be an artist during this moment. It's much more about just doing what I can and being one of many people doing what they can to contribute. But certainly the themes of, you know, structural transformation and like a commitment to ruthless criticism, like to critique, and commitment to imagining other ways of being, other ways of organizing the world, like that. I mean, that's been on my mind for years. So, in some ways, I feel ready. I guess if that's the right word.
Well, Conrad, that brings up, of course, the CD that you came out with late last year, American Rage, which is very political. It's the most political thing you've ever put out. And the music that's on it, every single piece on it, all four of them, have a strongly political quality. I was surprised to see Aaron Copland and did not know how involved he was with various radical political movements during his lifetime. But you have others here, too.
Yeah, not a ton of people do. It wasn't emphasized in my learning about Copland either.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say a little bit maybe about Aaron Copland, because that's the name everybody knows, and then maybe we can also talk about which side are you on?
I actually started this program with a recital in Aspen. When I think of Copland, like the sort of mythical Copland, the Copland that is absorbed into this narrative of Americana, this like sound of Americana, as though that were some, you know, easily identifiable thing. But, this sort of bucolic Copland that we might imagine his orchestral music. I love that music. I love that music a lot, but some of the craggier pieces, which share the language but maybe have a rougher edge to them, to my ears, this Copland piano sonata from day one, from the first day that I like took out the score from the library, I was just like, this piece is full of mournful feeling. And then what really became interesting to me was like during the 2012 presidential election, I think it was Rick Perry who was running in the Republican primary and ran a campaign ad, an explicitly homophobic campaign ad that used music that was not exactly but clearly inspired by Appalachian Spring. And it was just really interesting to me that a gay Jewish man who openly had leftist sympathies was questioned by McCarthy, visited leftist farmers in the early 20th century. That sound, that this music by this person could be so abstracted and made to represent something that I would venture to guess Copland wouldn't actually be really down for.
As our society hopefully evolves and the lives of other people, whether they be gay or brown or Native American or all the different people that have been under the foot of
white supremacy. I mean, we should name it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about white supremacy is that it's not rooted in reality at all. It's not actually rooted in history. It's not rooted in people's real lives. White supremacy is a fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's not even real, you know? Like, you know, we have all these conversations about how are we going to make classical music relevant again? And it's like, you'd start by actually having it be about history. You start by actually, like, caring about the reality and not just using this music to feed a mythology that no one even really knows. Like, I'm not convinced that people really believe in it that much anymore. It just provides a perverse kind of comfort for some people, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I am in this tradition. I love this music. And I feel as though I love this music so much that I want to question the mythologies that uphold it. I want to see the white supremacist state dismantled. And I love this music, and I'm not afraid of losing this music. I think that if people are afraid that this music that we play, this tradition of music that we play, is going to be lost once we dig in and participate in a reckoning of, like, what this music has ideologically meant across history, I think add this dimension to our knowledge, to add these many dimensions to our knowledge. If we're afraid of losing this music, I would say we don't love it enough.
This screamingly obvious thing that you're talking about, I want to ask about that with a very, very simple and direct union song that you start your CD with. Which Side Are You On?
I mean, Which Side Are You On is just like the enduring protest tune. It originates in the 30s, in 1931. This combination of something so solid and something so mutable speaks to, you know, a kind of hopefulness, you know, that you know, in all of these multivalent different manifestations still share something. And I think that that's what I hear in the piece. That's what I hear in Zhevsky's piece. You know, Zhevsky pretty much launches you immediately into his take on the tune, in which he takes the tune and stacks it on top of each other. You know, the tune is happening in multiple voices at the same time and at different speeds and in different keys. And like, what I hear that and feel that as is like a version of that remixing that happens throughout history with the tunes. And I also get to improvise as part of it, which is very gratifying.
The traditional container that you have worked within has still at least provided you with the opportunity to create a communal experience with an audience.
I think that what needs to change in every single area, but like, we have to really make listening an active experience. My most utopian hope is that somehow through my music, or even my music making, my playing, that somehow I can scramble the dichotomy of, you know, we could call it performer audience, but I like to call it the dichotomy of like producer and consumer. I would love it if a person who is in the listening role to feel and be just as responsible to and for what's happening on stage, what they're hearing. In a time when I've been live streaming as like my primary vehicle for performing for people, you know, it's very humbling. You don't know where people are listening from. You don't know what they're listening on. You don't know if they're wearing headphones. You don't know if they're using their speakers. Maybe they've connected something to a TV. Like, there's all of these new things, and there's all these new variable factors that you don't know. And it's not that different from the experience of like listening to the totality, because actually listening to the totality of a concert hall and listening to an audience requires surrendering your desire to control that audience. Here with the live stream, I truly have no way of controlling like anything about like the context or how people are listening. And like, yeah, there are pros and cons to that. I'm not going to be Pollyanna and say that's altogether a great thing, but I feel like I have a much stronger faith in what the concert is that goes beyond a single format, a single container. And at least for me, like, I think opens up the possibilities a lot. You know, the real core is that we all agree to listen together. And that points towards a lot of different possibilities, I think.